Sports Day for Kia. The super fast charging all-electric Kia EV6. Red Energy, awarded Canstar's most trusted energy retailer nationally for 2021. That's Red Energy.
7 minutes past six. Hello, welcome along to Sports Day. Well, Ben Rothenberg is world-renowned as one of the great journalists in the game of tennis. He's on the line. He's not far away from joining us. Scoop McClure, captain of the twos of Gems, done a great job over the weekend. They've closed the place down since then. Nevertheless, he's here with an update on two really, really important games.
Thank you for giving me that nickname, by the way, which is now stuck everywhere at Melbourne Park.
Potentially, this is the upset of the tournament unfolding before us, and Demena is on serve. But thanks to you, Captain.
Hello, Jared. Happy Monday, everyone. Yeah, Daniil Medvedev, the number two seed, won the first set pretty easy against Maxime Cressy, 6-2, took the breaker in the second, 7-6. Cressy's fought back to win the third in a breaker, and it's now 3-3 with Cressy serving in the fourth. So a lot of our listeners, Jared, won't know who Maxime Cressy is. He has burst onto the scene recently. He's born in France, grew up in the US, went to UCLA. He's only qualified at the US Open once before.
Yep.
That was, he went out in the second round. So this is only his second slam.
But he made a big noise in the paper on the weekend saying he's not sponsored and he's not going to be sponsored until he becomes top five, top this. And he's here expecting to win, and his game is extraordinary.
So he also made the final in Melbourne. I think he's won the most matches of any player on tour in 2022.
Yep.
Now, it's only nine. It's only early in the year. But what I'm saying is he's in good form. He's 6'6", so he's nearly 200 centimetres. And he's got a massive serve, and he's a huge serve and volley out. So he's got a game that can trouble a lot of people. I've got to be honest though, Jared, you know, it's a surprise that he's got this far against Medvedev, because he has been in unbelievable form.
Well, he's a bit stiff not to be two sets to one up, because in the tiebreaker, he had opportunities to knock that off. But he's a great mover. But Medvedev at this stage is holding sway. What about the Demon up against Jack Sinner?
Yes, the Demon against the Sinner. That match is on serve currently. It's juice with Sinner serving at 4-5. So a couple of big points there. Demon could take the first set. And we also have to talk about Marin Cilic, Jared, who's up against the ninth seed in Felix Auger-Aliassime, the Canadian. Cilic won the first set easy, 6-2. Auger-Aliassime winning the second set in a breaker and then took the third, 6-2. It is currently in a breaker in the fourth. Auger-Aliassime with a mini break at 6-4.
Well, it's pretty tight at the moment. Medvedev has got two break points to take it to 4-3 with serve. So it looks like he will get the job done, but don't count him out completely.
No, not. He saved a couple of break points in this game already, Cressy, as well. Hey, Jared, we should get to the number one man when it comes to reporting on tennis. We've had Christopher Cleary, who's, of course, been the great for the last 25, 30 years. Ben Rothenberg, a lot of people would know, is the go-to man with all news and views. Contributor for the New York Times and CNN, amongst many others. And he's been good enough to give us some of his time. Ben, welcome to you.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Greg. Good back here.
It's been an interesting time. Totally different to every other time you've been here, when it's just a total celebration of tennis. This is almost a bit like what we have 8 weeks of the year in a football season, where there's a calamity almost each and every week for Tennis Australia. This has been almost their annus horribilis in many respects.
No, absolutely. But luckily, I do think they've managed to leave most of their problems at the door on day one of the slam, getting the Djokovic thing sorted out and having him on a plane out of the country the day before the tournament started, I think has led to a relatively cleaner break than if he, you know, actually been in the draw and it had been a whole spectacle and circus about him playing. So in some ways, I think the damage was kind of minimized, but absolutely it was everyone started the tournament with much more of a hangover than you usually have at the first day of the slam year, which is usually sort of a, you know, back to school kind of happy time.
Yep. Yeah, I agree with you. I'm just interested in if you could expand a little bit more on what you thought would have been the case had Djokovic had stayed. I think the biggest winner out of the ultimate ruling by the federal court was Tennis Australia, because personally, I think it would have been an ongoing debacle the whole way through.
Yeah, I think it would have been a real security concern, honestly. I mean, just there were just a lot of heated, you know, passions. This is a very fractious issue, the, you know, the whole anti-vax situation, and Novak as a person can be very polarizing. Tons of strong support in the Serbian community in Melbourne, which is pretty robust, but also obviously a lot of antipathy towards him in the wider Australian population, as the polls showed. It just would have been a really divisive, really heated atmosphere that could potentially have been fairly volatile in some ways. So I think it's probably just for pure, you know, health and safety concerns, probably not a bad thing to avoid that situation, because it could have boiled over and, you know, potentially seven times if he kept marching on the tournament.
Ben, what do you think has been the reaction or the overall feeling in the US? I mean, you know, depending on what reports you believe, French Open is kind of tossing and turning over whether they actually let him in. And New York, I think, along with LA, might be the only two states with mandates for vaccines, as we have here in Melbourne. So what's the atmosphere going to be like for him at Flushing Meadows?
Well, yeah, it depends on if he can get in. I think from what I understand of the border requirements for just immigration into the country, they are requiring vaccination now. And who knows what kind of other exemptions he might try to apply for in the future. But that's going to be a very uphill road for him trying to get around those rules and always trying to find side doors into countries as the world gets increasingly vaccinated. And vaccines have been available, you know, worldwide long enough now that I think it's fair for countries to mandate them, which it wasn't, you know, 6 months ago when these things were still less readily available for people. So, you know, in the U.S., I think he's been a punchline. I mean, literally, they did a sketch about him on, or, you know, a brief skit about him on Saturday Night Live this weekend in the U.S., just making fun of Djokovic. And so that's kind of where it is. I mean, he's just seen as sort of a joke and someone who's easy for the vast majority of the population who is vaccinated and supportive of the concept of vaccines to pretty easily, you know, mock, the same way as in other sports, you know, in the NFL, Aaron Rodgers, who's the quarterback of the Green Bay Packers, who's eliminated from the NFL playoffs this weekend. And that was also met with a lot of sort of glee and, you know, schadenfreude from folks. So not dissimilar to Djokovic, really.
I've heard a number of commentators say what more could Tennis Australia have done, trying to get the best tennis player itself. But I think they make those comments without actually understanding what this community has been through over the last 2 years.
Yeah, I don't understand the calculation that they made at all, or I think it's completely wrong. I think this tournament would have completely survived and thrived without Djokovic if he just hadn't ever, you know, gotten on a plane here. I think it's a Grand Slam that endures. It's been around for, you know, there's posters around the grounds this year celebrating 100 years of Australian Open women's competition. I mean, this is a really enduring event, and there's plenty of pullouts and absences that happen at various times, and it's much bigger than any one person. And so I think the real mistake they made was trying to bend the rules to accommodate Djokovic and to build this whole exemption process really just for him. I mean, it was only he and this one other Czech player who kind of wandered onto Djokovic's path somewhat unintendedly, you know, who was set up for. And I think Craig Tiley really had, I probably just as, you know, somewhat of a theoretically neutral arbiter as a tournament director. I know obviously he's not. But, you know, to make the rules, enforce the rules, and then kind of be agnostic a bit on who shows up or doesn't, you know, because the rules were fair. And I think it's, and there was certainly a lot of resentment in the player community that Djokovic was seen as finding a way to get around the rules that everyone else had been following.
So that was my follow-up question. How deep was that resentment, and how do you think it would have played out had he been here?
Yeah, I mean, I think that he was here at the tournament site practicing for a few days, and I heard from a couple people that it was just awkward having him, you know, walk into the room and having been the subject of conversation and controversy and just distraction for everybody. And then obviously on site, he would have been the whole story. I mean, this was a huge, huge, massive story around the world. It just hit this, you know, cross section of lots of different things in sports and society and health and the pandemic and politics and immigration and all sorts of stuff. And that sort of heat would have, I think, sustained and really distracted from the tennis. And, you know, and for some people might have benefited from that. Like, let's say someone like an Ash Barty, you know, who might have been getting a lot of hype and pressure for coming up into her Australian Open, was able to arrive fairly under the radar, you know, because Djokovic took all the attention in the spotlight for the build-up time. So maybe there's some unintended benefits for some other players who might not have minded, you know, someone else overshadowing them or giving them a bit of cover.
So much more to talk about, Ben. If you wouldn't mind just holding on, we'll come back to you after the break. But before we do, Cressy is 40 love on serve in the fourth. It's 4-4, and it looks like Cressy has just served it out. In fact, he has 5-4 in the fourth. He has held. And the score from Deminar and Sinner.
So Medvedev now needs to serve to stay in that fourth set, and we are at 5-6 with Sinner serving. So again, Deminar 3 points away from taking that first set or a breaker.
More Ben Rothenberg after this.
Sports Day for Kia, the super fast charging.
Welcome back to Sports Day. We are here thanks to Kia. You can check out the super fast charging all electric Kia EV6.
Going to a tie break, Demon or Sinner?
Demon or Sinner at a tie break?
Tie break first set, Sinner leading 2-love with a mini break.
And Cressy and Medvedev are on serve 5 apiece in the fourth. But Scoop, Ben Rothenberg is still with us.
Ben, speaking of Aussies, I'm interested in your thoughts on Nick Kyrgios. I mean, we all know that, you know, his talent is. He's great, but in between the years, it hasn't been as great for him. I thought the thing that went underrated at his press conference late that night against Medvedev was that he wouldn't confirm whether this year would be his last year on tour or not. I mean, is this guy going to end up retiring before he's 30, having only made a couple of Grand Slam quarterfinals?
Yeah, I was actually the one who asked him that question because I had been sort of... He dropped hints about that before last summer as well. And he, you know, it's tough to know with Nick. And, you know, sometimes I think he just says things like that to get attention, honestly. But also I do think that he's, you know, a bit conflicted and just not really sure what he wants. But also I don't know what he would do without tennis in a lot of ways. You know, I don't know what else would sort of take the place of that rush for him. And he clearly,
TikTok,
as much
Instagram.
As he doesn't love parts of it and really does. Yeah, I don't think that would really give him the kind of rush that he gets from playing on, you know, John Cain Arena or Rod Laver Arena here in front of thousands of people and putting on a show and beating the number ones in doubles with Kokkinakis. Like, this is, you know, even if he's conflicted by tennis, he still on some level loves it and is so good at it. And even if that is, you know, largely unrealized potential in a lot of ways, it's, it's something that I think that he's going to really, you know, miss. And so I think he'll be around, but I think he, you know, maybe he can try to find a way to be a bit more part-time player to really reduce his schedule. You know, just affirmatively not play, you know, the European clay swing anymore ever again, which is not a part of the year he enjoys. Nine things to manage it. But he did seem like actually he put in a pretty, from what we were seeing on social media at least, he put in a pretty solid offseason in terms of training and conditioning. And then obviously caught COVID right at the beginning of the season, which hurt his lead up considerably. But then he played pretty well against Medvedev in that four set loss. And so it's very possible with a more favorable draw that he could have made some actual damage here.
I wouldn't be surprised if it went completely the opposite way. I think, and I've said this before on the program, I think Thanasi Kokkinakis and their friendship and their teammanship in the doubles is going to work for him. And I wouldn't be surprised if it just settled him down and gave him a genuine enjoyment on the world scene, travelling potentially with a team. He does seem to me to respond to teams, whether it be in the Laver Cup or the ATP Cup, Davis Cup. I don't think he really has much time for it at this stage. But I wouldn't be surprised if he went full circle and found a way to, you know, maximise his talents in another form, and that is part and parcel of the Thanasi team.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, honestly, he and Thanasi have the talent and have had some bad luck. Certainly, Thanasi's had lots of bad luck with injury over the course of his career. And I would love to see them maximize on this opportunity they have in the doubles draw going forward. You know, when singles players are dedicated and motivated to do well in doubles, they do well. You know, these are guys who are frankly just more talented at bigger weapons than the doubles specialists who occupy most of that draw. And you saw that very clearly in their win over the top seeds and the gold medalists. So I would love to see them get to it. I just think it'd be just a nice, you know, sort of top line achieve, even if it's doubles, to have each of them be an Australian Open champion on some level would, I think, be reflective of their talents. And so I think that would be a well-deserved thing if they can, again, keep their focus and really commit to this thing, because certainly people won't roll over and give it to them in these last three rounds of the tournament.
So one thing that has certainly come to my attention is the doubles. Now, I used to be a great doubles lover. I used to watch the doubles. I used to love and admire the doubles teams and the tactics and the pairings. But it has gone right off the radar over the last decade or so. These two guys could actually put it back on the map and people start to take it more seriously. Certainly, the TV networks will be hoping that's the case.
Yeah, no, that's a huge, huge thing for doubles is relevance going forward is the top players playing it, the top single stars, because doubles does not make stars, unfortunately, unless it's something really extreme like the Bryan brothers, you know, who are twins and have kind of gimmick and win double-digit slams together. But that's a really unique case. Otherwise, doubles does not, except unless, again, you're from a country that really doesn't have any other players. Like, there's been a few Indian double stars in the past couple decades, Sonia Mirza, and then a couple on the men's side as well. But that's, again, a country with a big tennis appetite that hasn't had any singles traction at all.
Yeah, I've got to say,
those guys are making their moves.
I couldn't have told you the names of the doubles world champions. I wouldn't have known them outside of the Bryan brothers. I think no one really has replaced this in our conscious mind.
No, completely. And so that's what I'm saying. The top singles players need to play doubles for it to stay relevant and, you know, honestly to justify its continued existence on some level. And I think that it's tough, especially for the men. The best of five format at the Grand Slams is very prohibitive to adding on more things. And it's gotten much, much more physical and demanding. And, you know, there's so much more emphasis on recovery on off days between matches. And so just the top men are not doing it. But I've seen it, you know, in American tennis, certainly firsthand with the Williams sisters and women's doubles, how much it adds to the broadcasts and to the slate when, you know, you get a second chance to see these big stars often on, you know, closer up, a smaller court. In this different format, it really adds a tremendous amount of value for the tournaments when they can get the single stars on the court. So whatever can be done to do that, I think would really help make this a better used resource and opportunity.
And Ben, last one from me. Ash Barty, we know the form that she's been in. She's been world number one for what, best part of 2.5 years now. She's obviously a two-time champion, once at the French, once at the Wimbledon. Do you think that she needs to win her home slam to increase the aura over her? Do you think there are still people out there doubting whether she is the dominant world number one that others have been? I'm just interested in your view on that.
I would say, honestly, I think a few of those whispers or doubts were probably there before she won Wimbledon.
Yeah.
Because I think the way that she won the French Open, that draw really kind of collapsed around her. She didn't have to play a lot of established stars. The final was pretty lopsided. Honestly, she played against a player, Markéta Mondrosheva, who just really had a kind of no-show effort that day. So it was not the most climactic Grand Slam win you'll ever see by any stretch. But then I think going forward and then she held on to her ranking, and it was a bit in part because of the rankings freeze because of the pandemic that they changed the ranking. So even though she wasn't playing much during the early part of the pandemic, when the tour resumed, it was still, you know, she still had that ranking. So that probably led to more questions as, you know, especially Osaka reeled off back-to-back Grand Slams with Barty was sitting number one. But now I think really starting with her title in Miami actually last year, which was a pretty full strength tournament that Barty won and played a bunch of big players and won it there. And then the Wimbledon title, I think that she's pretty clearly the number one and deservingly so. And obviously it'd be great for her perception in Australia. The title drought here has been longer than any other Grand Slam country in terms of not having a men's or women's singles champion from the home country. So for Australia, I'm sure it'd be huge and really kind of consolidate or consummate her stardom. But I think at this point, she's a consensus number one. There's no real plausible alternative to her.
And I thought last night we just saw her dissect a young up-and-comer, Amanda Anisimova.
Anisimova. Yep. Coached by an Australian in Dan Cahill.
And I'd like your thoughts on Anisimova. I'll get that name out.
Anisimova, yeah.
Anisimova. I was really fascinated by her win the previous a couple of nights ago against Naomi Osaka. Osaka, I thought, played a dumb game, just kept hitting it back to her strengths. And yet you saw a much more calculated game plan from Ash Barty, taking her off court, you know, using all manner of shots to basically just pick her out, unpick her at the seams, if you like. Your thoughts on how far the young American can go? Because she is young and she's got a great lesson and she's got now a great coach who knows all of what she needs to learn.
Yeah, absolutely. No, the talent's been there for Anisimova for quite a while at this point. And she was a junior U.S. Open champion at a very young age. I think she's 15 when she won that tournament. And she made the semifinals of that French Open, the Barty one, at 17, I believe. And so, and they played each other in a very sort of up and down rocky semifinal between the two that wound up being very fateful for Barty's career and trajectory. And then Anisimova's father passed away shortly after that, before the U.S. Open. And that really, you know, threw her career and its ascendancy for a real loop, and definitely derailed her in a bunch of ways, understandably, for a bit. But she's coming back from that now. She seems to have found a good base, like you said. And Darren Cahill signing up to work with her is a huge vote of confidence in her talent and her potential that a coach like Cahill would be signing on to the Anisimova team. She played well against Osaka. Osaka had match points in that match. It wasn't Osaka was, you know, out of it or thoroughly beaten. I mean, Osaka did come close, and that was match everybody was circling in the draw when it came out, you know, this idea of the Barty-Osaka fourth round. So a bit of disappointment there. We didn't get to see that match because they've been the best two players for the last several years, but haven't barely played each other at all, with them playing fairly different schedules and peaking at different times. But Anisimova, I think, absolutely has the talent to become a top 10 player, let's say, this year. I think that she's very much someone to look out for, and someone who still has time and growing to do, and her fitness can get better, I'm sure. But the raw weapons and the power things are there, because she really was, you know, trading power for power and winning against Osaka in that third round, which is not something that many players on this tour can do.
So will we ever see Federer and Venus and Serena Williams win another major?
Ooh, you know, it's honestly tough to say. I mean, honestly, I think the real question is if we'll see them back on tour.
Yeah.
You know, they're both in their, all three of them, if you mentioned Serena and Venus, they're in their 40s, all of them, and that's an age well past, you know, traditional sort of expiration dates for a tennis player's career. And Federer's had real, you know, significant knee injuries, and it's just, I think, sort of some of his rehab is just about trying to, you know, live a pain-free rest of his, you know, adult life, rather than trying to get back to the shape of being a, you know, elite competitive athlete, playing, you know, best five tennis matches in his 40s. So we'll see what he does, and same with the Williamses. You know, both their rankings will fall now well outside the top 200, I believe, after this tournament, because Serena made semifinals here last year. Which was an incredible run, and probably really underrated that she did that at 39, and, you know, played well enough to win that tournament really last year. So it's tough to say. I haven't seen, you know, they haven't confirmed anything. It's not clear how much Serena is planning on playing. She's playing a very partial schedule the last few years anyhow. So I don't know what she would target as a comeback if she even decides to come back. But yeah, it's been the sport will certainly miss them. But as we're seeing, and we saw at the U.S. Open last year, especially on the women's side maybe, where there was a really popular final with Emma Raducanu, the British teenager qualifier, came out of nowhere to win and become a real superstar of the sport. You know, the sport, like without Djokovic, will keep churning out new stars and new stories and have things for people to watch. And as great, as generationally great as people like Federer, the Williams sisters are, you know, the sport will find a way without them pretty organically.
And it's done that
four Grand Slams a year and lots of chances for new champions. Yeah,
it's done that ever since Rod Laver retired. Grand Slam winner, proper Grand Slam winner, and the sport has continued to be healthy. Great to have you on board, Ben.
Thanks,
really
Ben.
Appreciate your time and your thoughts and giving you so much of your time. All the best.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Good on you, Ben. How good is he, by the way?
Terrific.
I mean, he's a writer by trade, but you always see him pop up on TV and CNN in the States. And
it's big Twitter, man.
Radio, big on Twitter. He's even bigger than you on Twitter. Yannick Sinner has taken the first set over Alex de Minaur in a breaker, taking the breaker 7 points to 3. Hour and 14 minutes, Jared, that first set went for.
It's going to be a long night.
Well, the thing about the Demon is that he's ultra fit and he gets a lot of balls back.
So is
so that could go forever.
Boy Sinner.
And Medvedev has won. Unfortunately for you.
Gee, did he
talking
ever.
Up Maxime Cressy.
Well, he had two goes at, I mean, he's a very
he's
good
gonna
serving
be a player,
volleyer. He tipped two balls from a metre away from shoulder height into the net. That cost him the set.
Time for news headlines with Tony Taddeo.
Good evening. The man accused of abducting Cleo Smith in Western Australia in October last year has pleaded guilty to kidnapping the four-year-old. The child was found in the Carnarvon home of Terence Kelly 18 days after disappearing from her family's campsite. Victorians who lost work during the pandemic are being headhunted to help keep depleted supply chains moving. The major supermarkets are working with Jobs Victoria to fill staff shortages. 17 people have died with COVID in the past 24 hours in Victoria. 11,695 new cases have been recorded. And CCTV images have been released of a man wanted over a sexual assault at Fitzroy North. Investigators have been told the female victim woke to find an unknown man in her home around 20 to 5 on January 8. The man sexually assaulted the woman before fleeing. More news at 7.
Time now for a sports update for Tyre Power, Australia's biggest independent tyre retailer, keeping you safe on the roads. Tyrepower.com.au.
Welcome back. Bit of footy news around. Not good for Port Adelaide. Charlie Dixon and Orazio Fantasia, both suffering off-season injuries. Dixon tearing ligaments in his left ankle. Fantasia recovering from surgery on his left knee. The club saying that they're going to consult surgeons. That doesn't sound good.
Not when you consider we're getting to the back end of January, Scoop. It's very unfortunate for those guys. Interrupted pre-seasons don't tend to end well through the season.
You were at the forefront of
what?
Unpacking Port Adelaide's forward line.
Oh, yes, yeah.
Kenthagoras theorem.
That's right.
Two talls and two smalls.
Two talls, four smalls, rather than three and three. And
they're important players.
They are two very important players for them. So torn ligaments in the ankle—that's a pretty big call to be going having an ankle reconstruction at this stage. Maybe the reporting of the injury is a little bit inflammatory. We'll see.
Okay, more sports day coming up. Ashton Turner is the captain of the Perth Scorchers. They had a 48-run win over the Sydney Sixers in Saturday's qualifier. Fair to say, there's a little bit happening over in Western Australia. Not just with sport, but with politics in general. Keen to hear from Ashton after this. Welcome back to Sports Day. We're here for Red Energy, Cairns' most trusted energy retailer nationally for 2021. And for Kia, you can check out the super fast charging all-electric Kia EV6. Ashton Turner is the captain of the Perth Scorchers, the first team through to the BBL decider. And he joins us from sunny Perth, I assume. Where are you at the moment, Ashton? Not from Perth. You're obviously here.
I'm definitely not in Perth. I'd like to be in Perth, and I'd like to be looking forward to a home final of this stadium. But that's not the way of the world at the moment. And our lovely Premier has decided that it's going to be difficult for us to get home. So as a result, we're in Melbourne at the moment, and we're going to be playing our final on Friday night at Marvel Stadium.
It's funny how easily we forget. We just think that it's a normal world and people can be in their own homes. Unfortunately, it's not like that. So, Ashton, there's obviously some frustration in your voice there. How has it been for you personally and your family and for a lot of your teammates who are obviously stuck away from loved ones without an end in sight?
Yeah, look, it's not ideal and it's probably not our preference. But that being said, we've had a lot of time to prepare for what our tournament's going to look like. We've known from early on that the likelihood of us being able to return home to Perth is probably slim, and we'd more often than not be playing games away from home, and that has been the case. We played our first game at Hopper Stadium in Perth, and we've been on the road since. But with that comes some adversity and some challenges, but there's also some upside to that. We've spent a lot of time together as a team, and with that comes the bonding and the time spent, in hotels. And I think that it's held us in a really good stead. We've played some really good cricket. Probably the knock on us in the past has been that we play well at Perth and don't travel as well. So to be able to play as well as we have so far in this campaign away from home, it's been really satisfying.
Ashton, can I ask you why you picked the Marvel Stadium as against the MCG for your home final?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think that had it been any other iteration of the Big Bash, we'd probably have gone for a ground that has dimensions similar to what we have in Optus Stadium. We know that most of the grounds are footy grounds, and wickets can be either long wides along the footy ground and be long boundary straight and short square, or they can be the other way. The MCG is really similar dimension to Optus Stadium, and the wickets run in the same direction. But as it's played out this year, most of the grounds we've played on have been the Marvel Stadium type dimensions with short square boundaries.
Okay.
And we feel like tactically we've been able to play some really good cricket there. There's probably a few reasons for that, and it was probably more the dimensions of the ground rather than the wicket.
So the big question is going to be about the availability of Mitch Marsh. Most people think hamstrings are anywhere between 3 weeks and 3 months. In fact, some people think you should be out for 6 months if you're a sprinter or somebody that uses power in their sporting pursuit. You've got about 4 days.
Yeah, look, we're fortunate for us and for Mitch. He's not a sprinter, so yep. We don't have to worry about that.
I'm sure Mitch is listening from the hotel room somewhere.
but it's not ideal, and would it not be a final this week, he'd probably be having a couple of weeks off, but I've got no doubt that for a big game, he's going to front up and play. We know how important his batting's been. It's been so exciting to, as a cricket fan, to watch him bat, and we feel
very fortunate that he's a part of our side, and we know we're a much better side for having him in it. So I know that Mitch won't want to miss a big game, and I'll be very surprised if he's not in our playing 11.
Jared, can I just ask you quickly, as the resident physio, if you had a medium tear in your hamstring,
yeah,
like, would batting hurt?
I suspect everything's going to hurt. Anything. That's,
I mean, obviously
got
you couldn't
movement.
Bowl if it was that. But
no, the biggest
if he's
issue
taking with a big stride forward and trying to hit a ball out of the park.
But the issue is really running between the wickets. And I mean, I take it you can't take a runner in if you take an injury, and you can't have a runner.
No,
so
it's only if you do it in game.
It's going to be complicated, this one, Ashton. I think he's going to be fours and sixes, and not much in between.
Well, if you've watched him bats in the last 12 months, anyway. He hasn't needed to run too much. If it was anyone else, you know, you'd start to be looking at plan B. But you know, Mitch is going well, I suspect. Like I touched on, the dimensions of Marvel actually mean that the stats show that not many twos get run at that ground, which is very different to somewhere like the MCG with big square boundaries. So, look, it's not ideal, but we've seen a lot of cricketers be able to play through injuries. And, you know, I think Mitch will... You know, he'll be exciting to watch come Friday night. We know good players stand up in big games, and you know, I'm excited to see him back.
So speaking about good players, what about good teams, Ashton? So you're chasing now a record fourth Big Bash title. Now, Jared and I spend a lot of the year talking about culture in sport. I'm not sure we could talk much about culture with sides that change so often season to season, and you're not together as long as others. What do you put it down to in your recent experience, other than having really good players?
Yeah, I guess cricket's got a really interesting dynamic. Most of the guys in our squad play for Western Australia in the Sheffield Shield in the state competition 12 months of the year. So there is a bit of you know, the culture that we probably see, you know, more with the footy clubs, guys spending all year together. But we have a big emphasis on, you know, how we initiate guys into our playing group. You know, the expectations and the standards that we expect from everyone within our organisation, and you know, I think that holds us in really good stead. We place a big emphasis in our list management on consistency and selection, and we like to get guys, particularly international players. We want guys coming back for more than one year, and you know, we think that holds us in really good stead. We know that in this climate it's not always possible, but we do our best to have a really consistent team. And I saw a stat recently that, you know, we've used the fewest amount of players in the last couple of seasons throughout the Big Bash as any other team. And that didn't surprise me to see that. And I think that's a big part of our success.
Played for Australia last year a couple of times in a couple of forms of the game. What's your ambitions as far as the national side is concerned, Ashton?
Yeah, everyone playing domestic cricket wants to be representing our country. You know, it's the pinnacle of our sport. And once you step foot inside that dressing room, you know, I know for me anyway, I realised pretty quickly that was the environment that I wanted to be a part of for as long as I could be. You know, we had some really challenging tours in the West Indies and Bangladesh last year. And fortunately for the team, our form was able to be turned around really quickly, and it culminated in winning a T20 World Cup, which was awesome for Australian cricket and Australian cricket fans. Unfortunately, it means that it's pretty hard to break back into that team at the minute. They're going pretty well, but you know, I'm not too worried about the selection. I'm trying to win a Big Bash title for the Perth Scorchers at the moment and play as well as I can for Western Australia, and hopefully everything else will look after itself.
Yep, and you've been doing that with aplomb, Ashton. It's pretty easy to see why they've made you captain. Thanks so much for coming on. Good luck on Friday against the winner of the Sixers and the Strikers.
Thanks a lot for having me, guys.
Very impressive, Ashton Turner there. They've been on the road since December 8th, so you can understand some of the frustration in his voice, and the likes of Josh Inglis going to Instagram and having a go at Mark McGowan is understandable. More sports after this. Welcome back to Sports Day. Just before 7 o'clock, so Alex de Minaur lost the first set, Jared, to Jannik Sinner, 7-6. He's down 4-1 in the second set, so it looks like he's looking down the barrel of a two sets to love deficit, which is not good. Hey,
probably expected though. I know a lot of people have been going the, you know, the national brouhaha, but if you looked at these two blokes, one's ranked 11, the other's 32, and Sinner is probably a class above, really.
Yeah, world number 10. And Swiatek and Kerstia have just started their match as well. Juice in the first game. Jared, speaking of the Demon, I went and watched him play on Saturday night.
Yep.
And then in between that and the women's match on Rod Laver, I walked out to Grand Slam Oval to have a beer with the mate I was at. I hadn't actually been to Grand Slam Oval. I'd been working for the last 8 days. And I wanted to see the atmosphere. The place was pumping.
Was it?
Jared, it was rocking. Mm. It was almost pre-COVID days. It was great.
Mask on or mask off?
Well, if you're drinking liquid,
yep.
Which a lot of people
doesn't
were.
Seem to be an issue in the stadium.
Yeah, I'm not going to get involved in that. Anyway, 9:55 it was.
Yes.
And in summer, the sun's just gone down.
Yep.
Music stops.
At 9:55?
I thought, no, they must be changing discs or something.
Right.
Not that anyone used discs anymore. And didn't come on for a few minutes. So I just wandered up to, he looked like an organiser or a security guard. I don't know what he was. I said, mate, when's the music coming back on? No. We turn off at 10. I said, well, why do you turn off at 10? He said, oh, because of residential noise complaint. I turned to my left.
Where's the houses?
There's the tan there. And I turned to my right. Well, Punt Road's a good kilometre away, so it's not there.
Eddie's not sleeping in-house anymore.
Then I turned to the MCG. No, that's not close. And then, I mean, the closest house would be the governor's.
Well, she's not going to be upset about it.
So can someone explain to me, because I guarantee you Tennis Australia didn't want to lose the 2 hours of serving drinks to 3,000 people.
At overinflated prices, yeah.
At $13 a beer. Whose decision was it to turn them in? Is this a council decision?
Has to be a council. You've got to get a permit. I suspect the good residents of East Melbourne have said no chance.
There wouldn't be a corporate body in Australia that would make that dumb a decision. So it has to be the council. Because you know what happened? Those 3,000 people got up and walked down Swan Street.
Scoop, that's one of your finer rants to finish the show with.
I'm getting an answer on this. See you tomorrow, folks. You are listening to Sports Day. We're here for the great people at Red Energy and Wilson Homes. Big hour coming up, just to be joined by our resident tennis expert, Peter Johnson, who has been, he's been in good form with the crystal ball.
Up until a moment in time.
Well, he got the Novak thing wrong, but apart from that, his match stuff has been really good.
Well, really good to a point. Well,
what's the point?
There's a bloke wearing too much bling, worrying about how he looks in the mirror.
Alexander.
Rather than.
That's a bit nasty.
Getting it done.
You see Zverev in a different light. I don't think he's going to live up to the hype. He doesn't turn up in big matches.
Well, people were saying that about Medvedev too, 2 years ago, 3 years ago. And look at the boy now. This guy needs to knuckle down.
Look at the boy now you've got with.
The boy needs to knuckle down and just find a way through this patch of his biggest problems himself. He's got an unbelievably good game. That's why Jono said he could win the tournament. Hey. Jono's got tears in his eyes, no doubt, when he saw him just completely capitulate. He didn't lose. He capitulated.
Yeah, he's awful.
And that's the problem.
Shapovalov's pretty good.
He is capitulating between the ears. A kid has to find a way. The boy, thanks Bobby Davis.
Yeah, that's unbelievable.
The boy needs to find himself mental coach.
Like Medvedev has.
Like Medvedev, to help you through. I mean, every athlete goes through this. Some people can coach themselves. Other people need to be coached.
I think we're going to play a bit of audio of this. And Todd, if you're listening, it was Jared that wanted to bring this up, not me. But there was some self-congratulating going on. Anyway, in the theme of that, Jared, in the spirit of that, Gem finished up for the tournament because there's no more Gem.
I thought you did well on Saturday.
As of tomorrow, because it's...
Yeah, nothing worth putting on.
Well, that's one way of putting it. Year-on-year ratings up 25%.
Well, you didn't have to say.
The only problem with that is I hosted last year as well.
Tell you what, I'm going to welcome Peter Johnson. Welcome to you, Jono.
Good to talk to you, Jim. I'd just rather you and Sam just keep going. This is fantastic.
Well, I just wanted to bring you in on this. Because it would appear as if there's an issue with the host, the captain of the A team and the captain of the B team. They are luxuriating in giving themselves a nice rap.
Someone has to.
I gave you a rap
no
on
feedback
the
in this industry.
I gave you a rap on the text. I said you were doing a good job, and now you're giving yourself a nice old rap on the. I tell you what, Hutchie is going to really love this for the self-congratulator. He's going to go first to the captain of the B team. And Zoe, our super producer, she rang me on, Friday or Saturday night, said...
Quiet night for Zoe then.
Zoe is also the producer for Hutchie's fantastic show on Saturday mornings.
Off the bench.
That has the big self-congratulator.
Yeah, it's very funny stuff with him.
And, this has actually jumped to almost an unassailable lead.
We talked about how likeable he is, and I don't send messages all that much. He had a big win at Roland Garros in the opening round, defeated Dominic Thiem, which is huge on clay, and he played brilliantly, and he played a lot of points at net, like that previous one that we just saw. So I sent him a note to say how much I was doing the coverage and how much I enjoyed it, and you know, congratulations on a big win. And he wrote back saying, my goodness, coming from somebody like you, I never thought my volleys were any good at all. But they are. They're much better.
That was seriously, seriously arrogant, Todd Woodbridge. Look at you.
Just giving it to him.
And then they threw it down to Leighton Hewitt. And Hewitt said, well, when you're finished talking about yourself, look on with the guy. Oh, gee. It was entertaining stuff from Todd.
No one else had to do any work. If Jim and Leighton, they did it all for us.
Oh, no. In fact, I think Zoe is going to throw Leighton's contribution on the back of that for Saturday. It's going to be a world beater for Hutchie. He'll be absolutely thrilled with that contribution.
Well, we've got our winner for the year, surely.
I must say, though, I think the coverage has been superb. I think you've done a great job on Jem. I only found Jem a little while ago. I actually found Jem. You wouldn't believe it. You know, I found Jem. No, I found Jeb by downloading Nine Now, and then up came Jem.
Yeah.
So, and there was your ugly face, but nevertheless,
that's good.
It's been an interesting couple of days, Jono, since we last met. Do you want to buy into the debate about Zverev so we can put that to bed?
Yeah. Well, look, I did come in with huge raps on Zverev, and really on the back of last year when he won the ATP Finals in London and just finished off so strong. And I thought, God, this is his moment, because he looked like he's serving yips. Oh, not yips, but
yeah,
just sort
yips.
Of,
yeah, they're yips.
You know, it was just serving badly at important times. I thought, gee, he's put that all behind him. But, gee, the match yesterday, he was really, I don't know, Shapovalov came out all guns blazing, but he just didn't find another gear, and he didn't serve well at all. And I think, you know, just he must be super disappointed with himself. And I think it's probably the five sets that is the next chapter for him in terms of really cementing himself as in the top two or three, because he's so good week in and week out in the best of three. But the five sets and the slams, it's, you know, yesterday he came up short.
I thought he was really poor in the end. I think it's a sort of performance that might haunt him for a while.
When Boris has a go at you about effort,
yep.
You know that you're plumbing depths that you probably didn't see, and it's going to be a tough road for him to get out of.
I reckon the worst thing that you could say about a top-line player or a top-line team in any sport, Jared, is that they've got a poor record against the best. And that's what Alexander has.
Yeah.
You know, he's got a shocking record against top 20 players at slams.
Mm.
And I reckon that stuff, Jono, you tell us, wears you down mentally after a while.
Well, look, I think, Sam, the one I felt like really hurt him, obviously, was that US Open final when he was really, he served for the match against Dominic Thiem.
Should have won.
And it was his moment and absolutely should have won it. And, you know, I think that one stays with you no matter how well you go week in, week out. You want to put that one behind you in a short period of time, and then it sort of starts to prolong. And, you know, yeah, I think it's really now, because the hard courts is his surface, that's for sure. You know, I think coming in here, he was really I had him as favourite. I felt like a lot of other people did as well. And look, I think he'll do a lot of stock taking after that, and you just wouldn't have been happy at all.
Do you think he's got too many gold necklaces, Jono, for your liking?
Bangles, as you call them, off air.
I can handle those as long as it doesn't get in the way of your second serve.
Well, Dennis Lilly had the one, and he used it to great inspiration. It was part and parcel of it. I think you've got to take a fiver before you actually start putting the extra ones on.
It is actually pretty amazing, Jono. You make a good point that he's so good in the ATPs, in the three sets, Jared. Yeah. Just having a look at him. So he's only made that one final, two other Grand Slam semis.
Yeah.
And yet he's ninth all time in career earnings.
Mm.
Like, he's earned over $30 million US. For a guy that hasn't played in many Slam finals, let alone won one, that's incredible.
Yeah, and week in, week out, Sam, he can just motor through a 500 level tournament, even, you know, and he wins his fair share of Masters 1000. So, look, again, it's this. And one thing, it's been so hot the last few days. I actually felt like I got there at the start of the match yesterday. Shapovalov was jumping up and down, looked ready to go five sets. And Zverev walked out flat and sort of, you know, it's just blistering hot. And I just felt like he needs something to ignite. He actually lost the first pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Was down a break in the second, smashed his racket to smithereens. And I thought, right, that's the jump start. And he broke a game later, but then, just didn't sustain it. And then kind of, you know, you expected another crack, but it didn't come. And with full credit, Shapovalov, I've got to say, he's playing with massive confidence, hits the ball. So fantastic to watch. And I think it could be, as much as we've talked about Zverev, it could be a moment for Shapovalov now playing Nadal. It'll be a cracker.
Jono, you've been in good form to date, but hold that thought. We'll take a quick break and be back on Sports Day after this. Yes, Sports Day is powered by Red Energy, the most trusted energy retailer nationally for 2021, and Wilson Homes. And you can enjoy the Tassie summer in your brand new Wilson Homes. Currently, we are joined by tennis expert Peter Johnson. Ash Barty and Anna Samova was a fantastic game with an eye to the future.
Good pronunciation from you.
Thank you. It took me four goes, but I finally got it. Ash Barty just proved how much of a master of the game she has become. She's got all manner of shots, whereas the opponent, and she's headed for big things, she's got three or four things she does extremely well, but she was given an on-court total craft lesson by Barty, and if Barty's in the tournament, she will not beat her unless she improves. And luckily she's got Jack Carl on her team, or son of Jack.
Yeah, but I think you're right about Ash Barty. She's her court craft compared to every other woman in the field is way ahead. You know, the combinations, the way she actually, like, there's been a lot of talk about the two things, I think, this tournament, her serve and her slice backhand. Well, both she couldn't be doing better, but I thought she's starting to almost use her slice backhand a bit more as like a just totally setting the court up now. She can set it up defensively or attacking. And I think what happened with Anna Samova last night was, you know, Anna Samova was struggling with the combinations that Barty was throwing at her. And look, she's got a massive future, but Barty is just second to none with her court craft.
John, a really interesting tussle going on between Dimona, or as you have to call him, the Demon, up against the Sinner, the Demon versus the Sinner. It's not original, but it's...
I like it, though.
It's certainly going to do the rounds, I think, over the next 2 or 3 hours. Dimona jumping out to a pretty fine start, but this kid Sinner, he will not go away.
No, Sinner's really the real deal. He's won some big tournaments already. Won't go away, as you say, but boy, what a great moment. And the poor guys, I mean, they've been waiting so long before they actually went on the court tonight. Massively long day with the two women singles, and I think we're heading for a very late night on Rod Laver Arena, but so much to play for here. I like the Demon. I think as much as Sinner, he's cracked top 10 only just recently, I think the Demon on the home ground is just really... It's his moment, and I think he's set himself, he's paced his run really well, and he's just going to just do anything before he loses this match. So, yeah, a great matchup, though.
Would only be the third Australian male, Jared, in the last 20 years to make a quarterfinal here. The other two being Kyrgios in 15 and Leighton in 05, when he would have gone all the way to the final and lost to Safin in 4.
Okay.
Would have been that year.
Marrett, what a character he was.
Oh, yeah.
And his bevy of beauties that used to follow him here, Jono.
Wow, that was worth its own TV show, which I think he actually got in the end. Jono, just back quickly on Barty. I'll ask Jared this first, because I think this is a fascinating conversation. Jared, who would you say is the second best tennis player in the world in the women's right now?
I've been tossing and turning over that for about the last week.
The point is, there's no standout.
There's an equal. There's about five of them.
Well, I mean, Sabalenka can't serve at the moment.
Yep.
You've got Muguruza, who's knocked out early, and she might be past her best. Then you've got Sakkari coming through, who's, you know...
Looks good, but got beaten.
And, you know, just a top 10 at a slam for the first time ever.
Krajicek looks a pretty good player.
Yeah, Barbora Krajicek, who's the fourth seed. Jono, who's the biggest threat to Ash? I'm not just talking about this tournament. We hope Ash wins. But, you know, the next 5 years
Naomi's the best of her career.
Is it Osaka?
Has to be.
Well... Look, Osaka, having won four slams, you have to say, and I think she was perhaps a little underdone coming in here, and she seems to be really back on track as far as her overall career goes. I think there's someone like Bianca Andreescu is one that we've sort of forgotten about because she's been injured. But I think there is a fair point to make that there's actually a massive gap between Barty and the rest of the field. Like, I would have actually thrown in Muguruza in the conversation there too, but then, you know, when you actually do benchmark it against what Ash Barty is doing week in, week out, and you think of also like Wimbledon final and, you know, what she's done and who she's beaten throughout the year, there's been no one that's sort of really
threatening her, and so I can't see it changing. We think she comes out of here and then it goes onto the clay. She's won the French and then goes on to Wimbledon on the grass.
The point that I was trying to make, Jared, is that
there's a chance for a big run.
This is Ash's time. Yeah. You know, if she gets everything right, and the way she's playing and the way she's talking, she sounds like she's in a great place in her life and her career. We could have 4 years of, you know, six, seven, eight, nine slams if she gets on a roll.
Yep. I think that's pretty fair. I would have thrown Simona Halep in there as well, but she lost today in incredible circumstances.
Cornet?
Against Cornet, who hasn't made a quarterfinal in 700 tournaments.
Yeah, 65th slam, I reckon this is for her, and this is her first time at 32 in a quarterfinal. What a run that is.
See, that's the sort of stuff that you get on Gem. Jono, that's the sort of detail you would get on Gem.
A channel that you only found for the first time in your
I found
50
it.
Years on this planet
I found
a couple
it
of days ago.
Via an app.
And Jared, you're a step ahead of me. I have to go in the bedroom because I can't get it on my Foxtel in the main room.
Oh, terrific. No,
but Scoob, I did go in there and you're terrific.
No, he was. That's the sort of stuff you do get.
Thanks, Jono.
Kyrgios and Kokkinakis have breathed life, Jono, into the doubles itself, not just the Australian Open.
The not-so-special case.
I think that it's amazing how that's re-emerged, special case.
Well, because they're winning again.
Exactly.
Sort of.
I think, Jono, the doubles had lost its way. I couldn't have told you who the world champions were. Once the Bryan brothers retired, I thought doubles had disappeared completely. But they could potentially, you know, put it back where it should be. And I think it's ridiculous of the ATP and the WTA to allow these things to die on the vine simply because you watch Channel 9, Scoops Mob, we'll have this front and centre. It'll be prime time. It'll rate its backside
no
off.
No doubt about that.
And all of a sudden, the TV networks are going to say, well, hang on, guys. Let's get more doubles. Let's get the main guys playing doubles. Why isn't Dimonar playing doubles with somebody? Why isn't Medvedev playing doubles? Mm. So we can have doubled entertainment.
We could have Novak. Oh, no, we could. Sorry. Go on, Jono.
Well, one thing, a lot what you said. Well, first of all, the tours have had a crack at trying to get the doubles profile up, legislating that, you know, you have to have at least one main draw doubles match a day on your main court, etc. But with the tours playing one...
It doesn't matter. You can legislate all you like. What they should be doing is telling the top 20 players you have to play doubles up until you're 30 years of age and hopefully after that.
But Jared, hear me out a little bit here because I think there's also the issue of when the tournaments are 1 week, it's sometimes hard to get the top singles guys to play doubles because the commitment's too great. And I'll give you an example. Kyrgios came to a tournament in Zhuhai in China, had to play. He didn't get there till the Tuesday. He played, had to play singles and doubles that day. It stops the schedule for the next day, etc. That being said, they have done massive advertisement for doubles, what they've done, and are still going to continue. The lines out in Kia Arena were fantastic, crowds going nuts, and a new audience too, like just an audience that just were, kids were just desperate to get in there and have a look. And these guys are so good at it. I just love to see them play doubles week in, week out. And
I don't think you need to have it week in, week out. Jono, I know you're a doubles fan, but that's probably being greedy. Just at the slams, that's where they need to have a mandate. You must play doubles if you're in the top 100 and you're under 30 or 32 and under, something along those lines.
Well, the potential is there for, as you say, with a tournament over 2 weeks, you can double up, you can play singles one day, doubles the next. The schedule can accommodate that. So, yeah, look, perhaps it could be more of a rule. It's certainly what I've loved in the coverage of Nine, how much doubles we have seen, and it does bring it out. I just love, though, what Kyrgios and Kokkinakis have done. Remember, they won Wimbledon Juniors years ago, and with Kokkinakis playing as well as he's playing, boy, they're a tough combination.
They're going to win it without question. And well, I mean, we've got evidence already. Scoop's channel is off air. There's not enough stuff to look at. Now, if they played the doubles in the second week, all of a sudden you've got A-grade matches.
Good players, let's say
it's Kyrgios and Kokkinakis up against who were the two blokes that played last night? Sabatini and Augusta Butt.
Sabatini?
Berrettini and the Spaniard. Put those two together. How good would those two be?
Yep. Look, there is something to put. If you start the doubles later, and also I think it does get to the stage in the second week of a slam where you are looking for content, you almost want a rain delay or two in the first week to just, because we've had nothing. And so it's really, you can see, you know, we're juniors and a few legends, et cetera. But absolutely, it could give the doubles another life because people love to watch it. I think they love, but most of all, they love to watch the players they know playing it. And that's what we've got here this week.
Jono, great to have you on. Chat tomorrow.
Thanks, guys.
Peter Johnson there. He's been in good form, hasn't he?
He has, except for Zverev.
Except for Zverev and Novak.
And
but he did tell us pre-tournament that he was back in the kitchen sink up for Ash.
Oh, yeah, he did.
And
indeed,
looks,
he did.
Well, that looks a good solid bet.
It looks home, doesn't it? I wanted to ask him about Cressy. Maximilian Cressy.
He's a very good young player.
Isn't he? What?
He's actually, I think, won the most amount of matches of anyone on tour this year.
And it was an interesting story in the press over the weekend, I'm not sure who by, where he was quoted as saying he doesn't want a sponsor yet.
Yeah.
He wants to be near on top five in the world. Then he'll get a sponsor.
Because then he can auction them off against.
Because then he's going to get a big check.
Smart.
I like it.
Comes from the Jared Healy school.
No.
Wait. Strike while the iron's hot.
I wasn't ready to wait. Pay up front.
More sports stuff after this. Welcome back to Sports Daily here for Red Energy, Cairns' most trusted energy retailer, and for Wilson Homes. You can enjoy the Tassie summer in your brand new Wilson Homes. We're going to chat tennis weekend highlights, the latest in sport, bit of footy news to talk to you about as well. Jared, can I just tell you a little story from the weekend, which I think will interest you and the listeners?
Inside the court or outside the court?
Inside the grounds.
Inside the ground.
Yeah. So I worked all day Saturday and then had tickets to see the Demon Saturday night. So then he finished at about 9:30. So
yes.
In between him and the women's match, which I think was Castilla and Pavlyuchenkova, me and my mate Jack decided to go and check out Grand Slam Oval. I've been working, so I haven't been able to sort of see the atmosphere. Got there, the joint was rocking, Jerry.
Jumping, was it?
It was almost pre-COVID. Seriously, it was great. Music going. It was a 20-minute line to get a beer. It felt like the world had started.
Masks
again.
On or off? The mask rule at the Open is an absolute embarrassment.
I'd be lying to you if I said that the mask rule was
No one
being
cares
followed.
About the mask.
Having said that, 80% of the people would have been holding a drink.
Yeah.
So technically, they're fine. So it gets to 9:55.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in Melbourne in January, the sun's just really fully gone down at 9:55. Music stops.
Music stops.
We were looking around going, hang on, what's going on here? So I went up to one of the, I think he was an organiser or a security guard or whatever. I just said, mate, just out of curiosity, what's happened here? He said, oh, no, the music's got to be off by 10.
Right.
I said, how come? He said, oh, because of, residential, they get noise complaints. I turned to my left, and that's the TAM there in Batman Avenue. And I turned to my right, and we're a good solid K and a half from Punt Road, where the nearest house is that way. Now, the only person that lives within cooey of Grand Slam Oval is the governor. and
she doesn't care.
And that's the other side of Collingwood's footy ground. So I'm not sure they're hearing it.
No.
So I thought to myself, and you have a good mind for this sort of stuff. Who would be making this rule? Because Tennis Australia, who, say what you want about the Djokovic debacle, Tennis Australia's commercial acumen for a long time has been pretty good. They make bucket loads of cash from this tournament. They've been struggling. We've all been struggling.
Yep.
Why would you be sending the best part of 3,000 people down Swan Street to drink at other bars at 10 o'clock on a Saturday when all of that money,
Melbourne City Council.
Wouldn't 10 till midnight be the time when bars absolutely lap it up? People have had a couple of beers during the day. It gets to 10. They're having a dance.
What time's the footy finish?
Oh, well, the footy finish at 7:50. Game finishes at what? 10:15.
A bit later.
Yeah, 10:30.
3-hour coverage.
Depending on,
Well, the Eastern,
it had me baffled.
East Melbourne is notorious.
For being a bit snotty, yes.
For being almost, and I can understand on that side of the train tracks.
Jollymont side, I understand it. I get it.
But on the other side.
Can someone explain it to me?
Seems ridiculous.
Oh, I'd almost like to get an answer on this show in the next week.
Yes.
Because I could almost guarantee you that's not a Tennis Australia issue.
Of course it wouldn't be.
No.
The only way they'd be tipping them out is if they thought there was going to be more problems, say, post-midnight. Now, shut it down at 11, shut it down at 12.
Fine, I understand that part of it. You don't want people with 15 standard drinks in them walking out 10,000 at a time at midnight. Fine. But for goodness sake, don't send all these people across the road to your opposition from some ridiculous noise rule.
No, that doesn't sound right, given that you've got trains still running, Doesn't sound right, Scoop. Can you? Dance floor is still illegal, Zoe, according to Zoe, but no one was on a dance floor. They were all in the park.
Yeah, it was grass. It's not like
they were on the grass, rather. No wonder they were shut down.
It's not the 70s and 80s anymore, Jared. That doesn't happen anymore. Let's move on. So, quite a big weekend, really. I know everyone was talking about Ash Barty, but on Gem we were covering Osaka and her shock loss to Anna Samova, actually.
How good was that match?
I just stuffed it up there. Unbelievable.
That's the best ladies match I've seen.
Completely agree.
In 2 years.
Because they were both just hitting the cover off the ball. Looked like they were enjoying it, too.
It was a clinic.
I'm not sure Osaka sort of thought her way through the match as well as she could have. But
well, that's the issue that both of them have got. Mm. They're going to have to get better with their strategy and their thinking and their decision-making to knock off Barty, because Barty's actually caught up, not completely in the power stakes, but enough in the power stakes. And we saw how she was picked apart, stitch by stitch, 2 days later.
Yep. No, I agree. Craig Tyler did another interview.
Who with?
The ABC, Catherine Murphy.
Oh, yeah.
Who's a very good journalist. And Tyler addressed a little bit more about the Novak saga.
We always have been, and we always will be, a player-first event. And you can talk to every single player about our focus on it. But never will we ever put compromise to safety, and never will we ever not always try to do the right thing. And I think in this case, there was so much complexity and so much contradiction and even confusion leading into the event. We constantly sought that clarity. And we would do the same thing over and over again, constantly asking questions, asking for help. And I think everyone needs to take a step back and look at what could be improved. But in everyone's defense on it, it's a changing environment that none of us have experienced this before.
I've had a long reflection on this over the weekend. So you were here the day that I made those phone calls and got passed on from TA to the state government, to the Commonwealth, to Home Affairs, to Immigration, to Border Force. So one thing in Craig's defense that I'll say is that it was changing. And that he would have got conflicting advice from different people at the federal government. I've got no doubt about that. But I think what has probably come to light through the cracks a little bit has been the board's role in this. Now, clearly, Craig's job is not in trouble because the board was as culpable.
Well, that's the way I'm reading it, because I read Chip LeGrand, and I think Chip LeGrand's got great context.
And it was an excellent piece.
It was. And Chip LeGrand basically said the chairman,
Jane
Herdlicker, was complicit in this whole thing, essentially, is what he's saying.
Yep.
And we've since had that from other sources. Well placed sources.
Yep.
But I don't buy the complexity argument, I've got to say.
Well, you can only buy it to a certain extent, which is ultimately you took a risk. You can buy it to that point.
Look, he may have been getting conflicting advice, but when the health minister writes you a letter and says, this is not happening, I don't see the room to move there.
No, but I guess, and I'm not defending Tennis Australia, I understand it's their fault, but I guess what their argument would be, in hindsight, behind closed doors, is, well, that might change in 3 days. So just get him here and look.
Yeah, but that's rubbish.
Are they really going to turn him around? Are they really going to turn him around? That would have been the conversation.
That is why I have a visceral dislike for that decision.
Yeah, because ultimately it wasn't worth it, as we've seen.
But ultimately it flew in the face of what this community had gone through.
Yeah.
You couldn't possibly make that decision. You had to respect Melbourne and Victoria and the sacrifices and the tragedies that have occurred in this place.
Yep.
And that's why it was a really, really bad misread. So I don't buy the complexity. I know there would have been a serious level of complexity initially. And, you know, he's desperately looking to find a way to get him here. But when Greg Hunt writes you a letter as blatantly clear as that, I think the complexity argument loses all foundation.
Yep. It's a fair point.
So I'll be interested to see what happens. I suspect nothing's going to happen.
Nothing will happen, Jerry, because who's going to throw the board?
Nobody is on the board is stamping their feet, because it would appear as if Jane Hrdlicka is just as compliant in this whole mess that Craig Tiley and his executive were.
And that's the problem with boards sometimes.
Well, if you've got the wrong board,
they're not answerable.
If you've got the wrong board, it is the problem.
Yeah. I mean, who is Tennis Australia's board answerable to, ultimately?
Well, two of the people work for Jane Hrdlicka that's on the board.
That's right, at Virgin. That's what I'm saying. At a footy club, as you've seen at Collingwood, the board is answerable to its members. Who is the board at Tennis Australia answerable to?
Well, if the state government aren't going to pull their coat and the federal government aren't going to pull their coat, there's no coat pulling.
That's exactly what I'm saying. Guys, we made an error. No one say anything. Move on.
And the thing that they know, and we all know, is that once Monday night comes around and we have a little review on Tuesday, the siren goes and it's footy season and no one in this town cares.
That's right. I mean, as soon as we get the images of the two champions holding their trophies in front of the lake, as soon as that's done, we forget about it.
Mm.
And they know that. And they'll play to that. Hey, a little bit of footy news. Jeremy Cameron says he's on this new fitness regime specific to hamstring injuries.
Yep. Skipping. I hope there's some skipping involved.
I thought this would come up. Is he going to be skipping?
I hope he's skipping, because if he's not, he's not doing everything possible.
Do you remember last year? It was about this time last year, Jared.
You've reminded me about something, Scoop. Oh, okay. Go on.
Well, while we're in self-congratulating mode on this show tonight, we said on this show, Jeremy Cameron's got some hamstring soreness and he hasn't been at training.
Yep.
And Geelong said, oh, no, it's fine. Did he play round one? No. No. Did he have hamstring issues during the year?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes. Clubs love avoiding situations that are real.
Hang on before you go. We got time?
Yeah.
We need to get to the bottom of this. I'm going to elevate this from a late second hour story. It's going to graduate into the first hour.
What is it?
I've got two photos I'm going to show you, Scoop.
Oh, no.
So, Scoop, there's the photo of the remnants of the squad that played for St Kilda under Nick Del Sano, took it up to Melbourne, couldn't quite get the job done after three-quarter time. Those girls, I suspect, were in recovery.
Okay.
So what do you think they were doing?
Wading through the water.
They were standing.
Getting some salt water onto the lactics.
They were standing in 20-degree water.
Okay, it's probably a bit too warm for the recovery.
They left, and you wouldn't believe it, 20 minutes later, down came the Sandy Dragons.
Mm-hmm.
All 40 of them.
Yep.
What do you reckon they did?
Swam.
They stood in 20-degree warm water.
Mm-hmm.
I rang up Dr. Bruce from Queensland.
I love when Jared gets passionate about one of these.
Physiologist extraordinaire, high performance manager for an Olympic team. I won't say which one.
Let me guess. The 20 degrees does absolutely sweet FA.
Standing in the water does absolutely nothing unless you're in
ice.
Unless you're in something that's pressurized. So you'd have to be about 40 foot deep.
Well, so even if it was ice cold, it does nothing if you just stood there?
Even ice, well, it's not cold enough.
Yeah. You'd have to actually be in an ice bucket.
You've got to be in an ice bucket. I mean, if you stood in...
What would the bay be in its coldest? Oh, 13 degrees?
Less.
Okay.
9.
Oh, now, that cold, okay.
If you're standing in that for a period of time, you're probably getting some sort of recovery, you know, reduction in bleeding and all that sort of stuff.
So you actually have to swim.
Well, you need active rehab, in my view.
Movement.
Is so much better.
Don't go down to Sorrento, though. There's a few sharks down there. It's been spotted.
Yeah, a few sharks. There's plenty of jellyfish still there, although much less than the last couple of weeks. But I just wonder, I mean, it's this sheep-like mentality, and this is not a criticism of the clubs, but I just ask them to ask yourself the question. Are we doing this because we know it works, or are we doing this because someone else is doing it?
Well, yeah, a lot of what happens in life, Jared, outside of sport as well, is because of the latter, isn't it?
I mean, they're having a good time, and that's fine, but... Standing in 20 degree, there's a pole 100 metres away. Swimming out to the pole and back would do 100 times more for your rehab than just standing around getting sunburnt.
It's Dr. Jared Healy. More on sports today after this. Welcome back to Sports Day. We're here for Red Energy, Cairns' most trusted energy retailer, and for Wilson Homes. You can enjoy the Tassie summer in your brand new Wilson home. Earlier tonight, we caught up with the tennis journalist extraordinaire himself, Ben Rothenberg. Ben, speaking of Aussies, interested in your thoughts on Nick Kyrgios. I mean, we all know that, you know, his talent is great, but in between the years, it hasn't been as great for him. I thought the thing that went underrated at his press conference late that night against Medvedev was that he wouldn't confirm whether this year would be his last year on tour or not. I mean, is this guy going to end up retiring before he's 30, having only made a couple of Grand Slam quarterfinals?
Yeah, I was actually one of asking that question because I had been sort of he dropped hints about that before last summer as well, and he, you know, it's tough to know with Nick. You know, sometimes I think he just says things like that to get attention, honestly. But also, I do think that he's, you know, a bit conflicted and just not really sure what he wants. But also, I don't know what he would do without tennis in a lot of ways. You know, I don't know what else would sort of take the place of that rush for him. And he clearly,
TikTok,
as much
Instagram.
As he doesn't love parts of it and really does. Yeah, I don't think you can really, I don't think that would really give him the kind of rush that he gets from playing on, you know, John Cain Arena or Rod Laver Arena here in front of thousands of people and putting on a show and beating the number ones in doubles with Kokkinakis. Like, this is, you know, even if he's conflicted by tennis, he still on some level loves it and is so good at it. And even if that is, you know, largely unrealized potential in a lot of ways, it's, it's something that I think that he's going to really, you know, miss. And so I think he'll be around, but I think he, you know, maybe he can try to find a way to be a bit more part-time player to really reduce his schedule, you know, just affirmatively not play, you know, the European clay swing anymore ever again, which is not a part of the year he enjoys. You know, yeah, find things to manage it. But he did seem like actually he put in a pretty, from what he was, what we were seeing on social media at least, he put in a pretty solid off season in terms of training and conditioning. And then obviously caught COVID right at the beginning of the season, which hurt his lead up considerably. But then he played pretty well against Medvedev in that four set loss. And so it's very possible with a more favorable draw that he could have made some actual damage here.
I wouldn't be surprised if it went completely the opposite way. I think, and I've said this before on the program, I think Thanasi Kokkinakis and their friendship and their teammanship in the doubles is going to work for him. And I wouldn't be surprised if it just settled him down and gave him a genuine enjoyment on the world scene, travelling potentially with a team. He does seem to me to respond to teams, whether it be in the Laver Cup or the ATP Cup, Davis Cup. I don't think he really has much time for it at this stage. But I wouldn't be surprised if he went full circle and found a way to, you know, maximise his talents in another form, and that is part and parcel of the Thanasi team.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, honestly, I mean, he and Thanasi have the talent, have had some bad luck. Certainly, Thanasi's had lots of bad luck with injury over the course of his career. And I would love to see them maximize on this opportunity they have in the doubles draw going forward. You know, when singles players are dedicated and motivated to do well in doubles, they do well. You know, these are guys who are frankly just more talented and bigger weapons than the doubles specialists who occupy most of that draw. And you saw that very clearly in their win over the top seeds and the gold medalists. So I would love to see them get to it. I just think it'd be a nice, you know, sort of top line achievement, even if it's doubles, to have each of them be an Australian Open champion on some level would, I think, be reflective of their talents. And so I think that would be a well-deserved thing if they can, again, keep their focus and really commit to this thing, because certainly people won't roll over and give it to them in these last three rounds of the tournament.
Well, it's great to catch up with Ben, Jared. He's
he's good.
He might be the best. It's him and Chris Cleary for obvious reasons.
And he's going to join us again next Thursday, yeah, I believe, along with Jim.
Thursday or next Thursday?
This Thursday.
Yeah.
Along with Jim Courier.
Is Jim coming on?
Jim's coming on.
I got to sit with Jim today.
Did you?
Yep.
And?
Well, I've known him around the traps for a few years.
Yeah.
But we've never really talked.
Right.
And I walked into the green room today.
Yeah. He said, "G'day, Scoop."
No, I said, "Hey, Jim." And he said, "Hey." And I went, I'm Sam. He's like, "I know." And I was like, "Okay."
Okay, that was it.
No, we talked.
He brushed you.
We talked about golf.
Okay.
I can hear Zoe trying to feed you with rubbish to throw at me. Don't. She loves loading the gun, Zoe. She doesn't fire a lot of bullets, though.
No. He's okay.
Where's Lawrence, by the way? Is anyone?
He's down at the.
Has anyone spotted him?
He's off.
Looking forward to having him back. Thank you, Zoe.
He's off on a holiday.
Is he?
Yeah.
It's been a long holiday.
Oh, he's not back until mid-February.
He must get more holidays than
Scoop,
most.
Shut up.
Producers.
Before we go, a New Farm weather update. New Farm's products are formulated with the highest quality right here in Australia. New Farm, Australian through and through. And, folks, the weather tomorrow is the same as it was today and the day before and the day after. It's humid. It's 32. It's partly cloudy. We're expecting storms on Wednesday.
Oh, good.
the surf is going to have a little bump in it, just a tiny little bump, probably only good if you head
on Wednesday
west of Cape Otway, because it has been flat for an extended period of time.
Can I ask a dumb surfing question just before we go off air?
Yeah. It doesn't get flat in Victoria this long very often. In fact, maybe once every 3 years.
Does rain affect surfing?
No, it doesn't.
At all?
No.
But does it, like, visibility-wise?
A little bit. Depends on how heavy the rain is.
But otherwise, it's...
No, not a relevant factor.
No, because I suppose once you're wet...
You're wet. Now, if it's freezing cold rain, it's freezing cold rain. But, you can be in the tropics and it'd be pouring with rain.
What a weird show we've had tonight.
It's been different. That was New Farm, Australian through and through. Scoop's had a nightmare tonight.
See you tomorrow.
We'll see you tomorrow.
Bye, Jared.